I have read a lot of books on preaching. I have taken a ridiculous number of classes on preaching. And at this point in my life, I have preached over 500 sermons. And one thing I've learned in my education and through my experience is that you should never start a sermon with a joke. So a frog walks into a bank, and he needs a loan for his lily pad. And so they send him up to a loan officer, and her last name is Whack. Her first name is Patricia. And he says, "I need a loan." And she says, "Okay, I'll tell me your name." And he says, "I'm Kermit." And she's like, "Oh, Kermit the Frog." He's like, no, Kermit Jagger. And she says, "Oh, is your dad Mick?" And he says, yeah, the rock star Mick. And she goes, okay, if we give you a loan, do you have anything for collateral?" And he pulls out of his pocket a little ceramic elephant. It's like 1 inch by 1 inch. It's this little ceramic elephant. She looks at it, and she's like really confused. She's like, "I have to go talk to my supervisor." So she goes over to her supervisor, and she says, "There's this guy in there named Kermit Jagger. There's a frog in there named Kermit Jagger who wants a loan, and he's given me this." And she hands the ceramic elephant to the to her supervisor, and she's like, "What is this?" And he says, "It's a knick-knack, paddywhack. Give the frog a loan. His old man's a rolling stone." All right. That comes from the late, great Norm MacDonald, who recently passed away. And all comics, when he passed away, acknowledged that he was one of the best. And so as we've started with that one, I want to just have him tell another one of his great ones. So let's watch that.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office. Right?
You are correct. A moth goes into a podiatrist's office, mm-hmm. and the podiatrist's office says, "What's the problem?" And the moth says, "What's the problem? Where do I begin, man?" He goes, "I go to work for Gregory Linovich, and all day long I work." "Honestly, Doc, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. I don't even know if Gregory Linovich knows. He only knows that he has power over me. And that seems to bring him happiness. But I don't know. I wake up in a malaise and I walk here and there." And the podiatrist says, "Oh, yeah?" And the moth goes, "Yes." And he goes, "At night I sometimes wake up and I turn to some old lady in my bed that's on my arm. A lady that I once loved, Doc. I don't know where to turn to. My youngest, Alexandria. She fell in the cold of last year. Mm-hmm. The cold took her down as it did many of us." "And my other boy." "And this is the hardest pill to swallow, Doc. My other boy, Gregorio Ivanilidovich. I no longer love him. As much as it pains me to say, when I look in his eyes, all I see is the same cowardice that I catch when I take a glimpse of my own face in the mirror." He says, "Doc, sometimes I feel like a spider, even though I'm a moth, just barely hanging on to my web with an everlasting fire underneath me. I'm not feeling good." And so the doctor says, "Moth, man, you're troubled. But you should be seeing a psychiatrist. Why on earth did you come here?" And then the moth said, "Because the light was on."
We're talking about humor and how that humor works in our lives. And in humor, there is a setup and there is a punchline. And one of the reasons I showed you that joke is because it is a ridiculously long setup. Just like the first joke, there's a ridiculously long setup. And you wonder, is this going anywhere? Are you going to stay with it? And in the end, there's a punchline. And if the punchline delivers well enough, if it carries enough payload with it, then all of the setup is worth listening to because the punchline is just that good. And so to try to make a somewhat serious point about humor and how that it reflects our lives, we can endure enough setup if we know that there's something coming in the end. If you trust Norm MacDonald, if you trust that he's funny, and if you thought that because the light was on was a funny enough punchline, then you will say, yeah, it was worth listening to that joke. But if you don't really trust Norm MacDonald, or you don't really appreciate humor, or you don't think you should tell jokes when you're preaching, then you're probably not laughing right now. But I want you to know that the reason we're talking about humor, if that's how you're feeling, is because it is repeated so many times in this particular text. In Genesis 18, verse 15, after lots of laughter, in verse 15 we read, "But Sarah denied it, saying, 'I did not laugh, for she was afraid.' And he said, 'No, but you did laugh.'" Laughter is repeated so many times. And so if you're laughing out of humor, if you're laughing out of scoffing because of my terrible exegesis, then you're doing something biblical this morning. Laughter is something biblical. We laugh because things are ridiculous, because things are unexpected, because things are unbelievable. Yesterday, Tanya laughed when she was in the kitchen, and I was like, "Why are you laughing?" And she's like, "There was one ant on the ceiling, and just as I took my orange juice, my glass of orange juice out of the fridge and set it on the island, the ant fell from the ceiling and landed in her orange juice." And I said, "I'm going to use that in my sermon tomorrow." And she's like, "Go for it." I don't think she thought I was actually going to tell you that story. We laugh when something unexpected or unbelievable happens. Sometimes laughter is cynical, like when a politician makes a promise that they have no intention or no ability to keep. We laugh when they do that. We laugh as a way of coping with the pain and the difficulty and the absurdity of life. How many of you, don't raise your hand, but how many of you went home last week after a very unusual sermon on Father's Day about circumcision and made circumcision jokes? That would be a pretty natural reaction to something like that. That is our body's response to stuff that we don't exactly know how to respond to. Throughout the Bible, if you do a word study on the word laugh, the most common occurrence is actually people laughing at other people, laughing in derision or scoffing, the kind of scoffing laughter. And so many of us feel like if there is any laughter in our life, it's that kind of laughter. People are not laughing with us, people are laughing at us. And that's how Sarah felt in this passage, and when she laughs in Genesis 18, it is that sort of laughter. It is the laughter of bitterness in her life that she has no other way of expressing it. She has lived a very difficult, very bitter life, and she has become a bitter old woman. She was taken from her homeland by her husband Abraham, who has not always been the best husband to her. And there was the time in Egypt where she was left in a very vulnerable, difficult situation. And then God keeps showing up to Abraham and giving Abraham all of these promises, but it doesn't seem like God really shows up and talks to Sarah, and she's feeling a little left out. And the main thing about Sarah, of course, is that she is unable to have children, that she can't get pregnant. And then she comes up with this idea that Abraham take Hagar as his wife, and Hagar gets pregnant. And what happens is that Sarah becomes incredibly jealous of her. Seems like God has shown up and blessed Hagar, gotten pregnant, and then God blesses Ishmael, Hagar's son. God is blessing Abraham, and now all of them are living together again, but Sarah still doesn't have any children, and it seems like God has done all of these things for everyone else in her life, but God hasn't done anything for her. In Genesis 18, the first half of the passage, she continues to feel left out. It's a hot day. It's the middle of the day. The sun is beating down. It's too hot to do any work. So Abraham and Sarah are there in the tent, and Abraham's looking out the door, and he sees three men coming toward the tent. And so Abraham rushes out to meet them, and Abraham has faith and insight, and he knows that these are not just three human beings that have come to visit him, but it is actually God himself. And we read that in verse 18, "The Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. When he saw them, he ran from the door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, 'O Lord,'" he addresses them as God, "'if I found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant.'" And so he offers a little bit of bread and a little bit of water because he realizes that this is a divine visit. And so they sit down, and Abraham runs into the tent. There's everything he does in this passage. He's running here, he's running there, and he's his same sort of anxiety and urgency he gives to his wife, Sarah. And so in verse 6, Abraham went quickly into the tent and said, "Quick, three seahs of fine flour, knead it and make cakes." And there's Sarah thinking, "I just want to rest. I'm 90 years old. These guys show up, and now he's telling me how to cook. He's telling me what to cook, and he's making me prepare this meal in the heat of the day for these three men." And as Sarah prepares the bread, he goes out, he gets a calf, and he gets some goat's milk, and he prepares a feast that is fit for a king. Not only a king, but the ingredients in the feasts are the same sort of ingredients that are given in offerings to God. Because Abraham recognizes that this is a divine visit, that God has come to him. Sometimes the three men speak, sometimes they are addressed as one individual. Now, either that's because acknowledging that it's God appearing in three men, or that one of them is a divine appearance and the other two are angels that actually go on and leave and go to Sodom in the end of the chapter. Either way, somehow, this is an appearance of God. And there's Abraham watching God eat this meal that he and his wife Sarah have prepared, and Sarah is still left in the tent. And she's thinking, God has showed up again, if this is God, whoever these guys are. But it's all about Abraham, and Abraham's getting all of the blessings, and she has fully given up any hope of being blessed by God. She's tired of waiting for God to show up for her. And then God starts to draw out Sarah. He does it by talking to Abraham. Verse 9, "They said to him, 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' he said. And he said, 'She's in the tent.' The Lord said, 'I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son.'" Sarah hears that. She's going to be pregnant and have a son, and she does what any 90-year-old woman would do if you told them they were going to be pregnant. It says, Sarah was listening in the tent door behind him. In verse 12, "So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, 'After I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have this pleasure?'" What she's saying is, we left Eden, we left Haran, we left Ur, a long time ago. We used to be young children full of hopes and dreams. We enjoyed life. We enjoyed each other. But it has been a long, bitter road. I'm 90 years old, and there is no way that there is any blessing left for me. God knows what ultimately what she is saying is that this is too difficult or too wonderful for even God himself to do. In verse 14, is anything too hard, or another translation, too wonderful for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. And then he goes out of his way to make sure that Sarah knows that he knows that she laughed when he said that she was going to bear a son. He is bringing out a confession out of her, even though she doesn't really confess it. He gives her the opportunity to confess the bitterness of her heart. That when God says he's going to do something good for her, she just scoffs at God. And many of us could tell a very similar story about seeing other people blessed by God, about seeing God show up in other people's lives, about God giving things to other people that they did not deserve, that they did not work for, that maybe they didn't even want. And you've spent your life investing in something, pursuing something. You've done everything you possibly can, and God still has not answered your prayer. We become bitter, and all we can do is laugh because it is so ridiculous. All of Sarah's life was a setup so that God could deliver this punchline. All of the things that God brought Sarah through, all of the difficult trials and tragedies of her life were preparation, 90 years of preparation, so God could come and deliver this line. You will Isaac. The word Isaac, the name Isaac, means he laughs. And God is saying to Sarah, there is going to be a day which you laugh, not with bitterness, but someday with incredible joy. So sometime after God left the tent and something started to happen inside of Sarah, and somehow her and Abraham, despite the fact that she's 89 and he's 99, they were able to come together, and she starts to feel queasy one morning, and then she notices that her clothes are starting to feel a little bit tight, and then she starts to notice that she has a craving for pickles or something like that. And then we read in chapter 21, if you want to just turn the page, verses 1 through 7, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at that time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac, which means he laughs, according to the footnote there. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God has commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born, and Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children, yet I have borne him a son in his old age? God turned Sarah's bitter laughter into laughter of joy. So when people see her pushing a baby carriage instead of a walker, and they laugh when they find out that it's her son, and she knows that they're mostly laughing at her, it doesn't matter because she is laughing with joy. Their laughter is a reminder to her of God's goodness to her. There is so much laughter in her life after 90 years of bitterness because of what God has done. I think someone who describes this really well is the author and preacher Calvin Miller. He's also a poet. This is his book of poetry written for children, Apples, Snakes, and Bellyaches. And this poem is called The Peekaboo Surprise. One night, old Sarah looked out at the trees and swallowed the last of her fig cakes and cheese and broke into tears, wailing, "Six deary me's, I'm so very unhappy. Abraham, please, would you pray and ask God if maybe, just maybe, he'd answer our prayers and give us a baby?" "Now, honey," said Abraham, "don't make a fuss. In April, you're going to be 70 plus. You're getting so old that you can barely hold your plate or your bowl or your saucer or cup. It takes you an hour sometimes to stand up. Forget about babies. I'll buy you a pup. Anyway, why do you want a new baby?" "Maybe, just maybe, I'd like to sing softly. Sweet rockabye baby. Mama loves snookums, kitch kitchy coo, patty cake, peek peekaboo. And I want a sweet little baby to coo, boo gurgly boo, be na na boo gurgle, goo goo." Then God sent an angel with bright shiny hair who came down and cried, "Hey Abe, are you there? I must tell you true, God's gonna create a great nation from you." Abe scratched his head and looked rather blue. "You best hurry up. My wife's nearly through. I'm as old as the hills, and my Sarah is too." "Oh, yeah," said the angel. "Now listen to me. Your grandkids will be like the sand of the sea, far, far too many to bounce on your knee." "Yeah," argued Abe. "Just how can that be? I'll sure have to bounce them on bony old knees. Besides, my sweet Sarah is all wrinkled up. She sleeps every night with her teeth in a cup. I tell you, the woman is baby-proof now. She's old, I say old, her joints have grown cold. And if she had a baby, what would I do? Play little league ball at 102? The angel just smiled. He started to leave and then turned to speak. "Tell Sarah to check with her doctor next week." When the angel had gone, Sarah saw her physician, a Mesopotamian old obstetrician, and said to him, "Doctor, I've been feeling dizzy." The doctor turned white and then fainted away. When he revived, he said, "My, what a day. Sarah, believe me, you're not going to die, but you'll have a baby the 8th of July." Old Sarah stood gasping with nothing to say. She too clapped her forehead and fainted away. When she got up, she ended her stress and bought a Chaldean maternity dress. The months hurried by, and at last came July. Sarah and Abby sang, "Rockabye baby, mama loves snookums, kitch kitchy coo, patty cake, peek peekaboo." And sure enough, Isaac said, "Gurgly boo, be ba na gurgle, goo goo." Abraham and Sarah laughed with cynicism for the majority of their lives, until God delivered the punchline of Isaac and turned their laughter into joy. It turned their laughter into laughter of joy. It took 90 years for Sarah to wait for that punchline to deliver. And in many ways, that is the entire story of the book of Genesis. Out of all of the dysfunction, out of all of the tragedy, in every single family, God injects some grace and some laughter. Joseph takes up the majority of the second half of the book. His life is a horrible tragedy. He is born and the favored son. He's given all these wonderful blessings. And what does it do? It ends him being sold into slavery, being forgotten and abused by Pharaoh until eventually he grows up and he becomes the prince of Egypt. Joseph does become, but so does Moses. So Joseph is the second in command in Egypt. And his brothers come to him and they see their brother and they think that now that their brother, after all that they've done to him, their brother is going to kill them. They have caused him so much pain and suffering in his life. And it's going to take us a year to get to this, but I'm just going to give you the punchline right now to the end of Book of Genesis. If you turn all the way to page 44, Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. Joseph says to his brother, Genesis 50, verse 20, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." That's the punchline of the book of Genesis. That's the punchline of Joseph's life. And for all of us who believe in Jesus Christ, we believe that all of our lives are really just a setup for the ultimate punchline, the ultimate surprise, the ultimate unexpected act of the resurrection and forgiveness and eternal life with God. What more unexpected thing is for God to send his son to die what seems to be an absolute failure of a life, only to be raised again and right now seated at the right hand of God? You believe in Jesus Christ, your life is not a tragedy, but a comedy. Because God takes all of this setup and he works it all for our good and for his glory. Mark Twain said, as I quoted last week, that comedy is tragedy plus time. Tina Fey, someone who has a great gift of humor, said that everything will be funny someday. No matter how painful it is, no matter how horrible it seems, she says, if something strikes you as funny and it seems too soon, just wait 100 years and maybe it'll be funny then. Eventually, everything will be funny. And I agree with her, though maybe not for the reasons that she says it is, because I believe that there is a God who is overseeing all of these things that are happening, and he is the one who will ultimately deliver the ultimate punchline. You are going to live, and you are going to be with God forever. And you are going to look back on your life, and you are not going to do it with tears because they're all going to be wiped away, but you are going to do it with gratitude and with gladness for all that God has done for your good, for his